Last week, he worked behind the scenes to make his team's Children of War podcast win the challenge. This week, Alex is on his own, nailing down his subject for interview week. On this episode, we'll follow him as he goes through the process. Will he be successful again? Find out on this episode of America's Next Top Podcaster. Welcome to America's Next Top Podcaster. I'm Brian Ibbett. On this episode, we'll follow Alex through the interview week challenge. He and I will talk about where he's at with the interview, and we'll hear the final result at the end of the show. But before we get to that, he has a coaching session with Tom Merritt. Let's listen.
Hi, Alex. How's it going?
Pretty good, Tom. How are you today?
How's it feel to be top four?
Oh, it feels pretty darn good.
That's great.
I was about to curse a couple times and I didn't. So, hey, I wanted to, first of all, thank you. It's been awesome having your advice here and looking forward to taking it in this direction with this interview thing. Interviews are kind of my thing and I love doing interviews. I have an interview podcast and I have a few ideas I want to throw by you.
Okay.
One of them, and you know, I know part of this challenge is really finding somebody interesting to talk to about a specific topic. Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the people I got is, I potentially have is, her name is Panzer. She's a internet personality. If you know her, she's the trade chat person for World of Warcraft.
Mm, okay.
And so I've been supporting her for a while, and I was thinking about doing a podcast where we talk about video game streamers and their perspectives on the latest esports and video game news, and just kind of use it as a platform to get their opinions and perspectives on specific things. And one of the things I was going to talk to her about was, you know, what it means to be a full-time streamer and you know, thinking about ROI, like what it would mean to somebody who maybe wanted to get into the business and like how they would do that. And also like the topic of what it means to be a female gamer was sort of the toxicity discussion. And you know, like maybe should I pick one of those topics if I go in that direction? That's kind of where my brain is at.
Gotcha. Yeah. So the key here, because you've got three other people doing exactly the same thing, right? They're going to go find an interesting person and they're going to sit down for up to 20 minutes and talk to them as well. So you've got to figure out how does your interview stand out? And it's quite possible, especially because you do this, that you can sit down, just talk and have a super compelling 20 minutes of, and that's it. But to hedge your bets, you want to come up with some stuff that it's going to push the envelope, that's gonna make sure that this stands out. And just from hearing you talk about Panzer and what and where your head is with that, it could be interesting to present it in the edit anyway as chapters, as multiple topics. We talked to Panzer about these three things, and you sort of come in as the host and say, you know, what, and set it up. You know, one of the things you might not know about Panzer is blah, 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 blah. We talked to her about that. Boom, you do 6 minutes on that, right? And it's excerpts and edited down conversation. Then you come back and you say another thing that we switched on is streamers and how streamers XYZ blah 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 blah. You provide a little more background and then you bring it in. A lot of times you just do that naturally in the course of interviewing somebody. You'll say, look, I know that streamers do X, Y, and Z, but what do you think? But that could be a way to differentiate it, especially if you've got multiple good approaches to the interview.
Sure. And yeah, I mean, it sounds like it's nothing deep enough to where it would push the envelope, like that specific topic. Is that kind of what you're driving at?
Well, unless if you can come up with that one topic where you can tease it, that's the test of an interview is, can you tease it in a way that people go, oh, I have to hear that. You know, Panzer tells you the three secrets to becoming a million streamer. Panzer tells you the things in trade chat you never believe would have happened, right? Like those are the things you're after, but you can't guarantee you're going to get them till you do the interview. So coming up with a structure that will help you make sure you've got something to tell the story of why someone wants to listen to this interview is important. It could also be segments. It could be, you know, I'm going to ask her to respond to five crazy statements from Trade Chat, or I'm going to ask her for the three most ridiculous things she's seen on a stream. I'm coming up with horrible ideas, but you can come up with good ideas that fit that template, I think.
Sure. Okay. No, that's good. Another idea I had, and this is kind of, I feel like it's a little bit similar to what we just kind of came off of last week from with Gidget. Mm-hmm. But we had, so, you know, again, talking about people that I've never really known. So my father-in-law is a retired Marine fighter pilot. Mm-hmm. The person that taught him how to fly and his wife are both, you know, it's a military family. She comes from a military family. Her dad was a World War II prisoner of war. And they're in the midst of putting together a museum in Poland, kind of talking about the, you know, like the experiences that prisoners of war go through. And, you know, I was thinking it would be really interesting to get her perspective on what that means to her and just kind of crafting a podcast series kind of around talking to people who have been prisoners of war, getting their perspective or their family members' perspectives. And this specific topic is around how they're opening up this museum in Poland to talk or to share these stories and artifacts, et cetera. And I feel like there would be a lot of emotion kind of behind that because – and that's a lot of like raw emotion. So what's your thought on that?
That's a really powerful interview. It's one you have to be super sensitive about handling. So it's a trickier interview because you want to get that emotional content out without coming off as manipulative or in fact being manipulative. You know, neither one of those things, right? But if the person is willing to tell their story and they have a reason for telling it that's important to them, then that's a killer idea. It's difficult. It's difficult to pull off well unless the subject is really forthcoming, you know? So that's that. If the person is in a, you know, what they're talking about is a very traumatic time, willing to tell the stories, then you're going to have a good interview. What you don't want is someone who wants to not tell their story, is willing to talk to you, but doesn't really want to say much. You really need to have something that moves people. You might want to start with that as an interview idea, find out if it's, you know, substantive enough, because if this person is willing to talk and you can pull it off in a sensitive way, you could have a winning idea there because it would be moving. It would be important. You can actually use natural sound like you did last week to kind of provide a little bit of audio breakup between things. You could even do the same thing I was talking about with Wow Chat, where you break it up into chapters. You could tell the story of before, during, and after being a prisoner of war and how that changed this person and tell a story that's growth. So I would encourage you to pursue that first. It's going to be the trickier of the two to pull off, but it has the highest reward if you do.
Yeah, certainly. And so the third, and this is one I don't know if I can get away with doing this. So the podcast that I do normally, and it's something that I'm very passionate about, is called The Dad Chronicle. And I interview dads, get their perspective on fatherhood, the struggles, et cetera, kind of their experiences with their dad, what fatherhood means to them. I was thinking about how it would be really powerful to have that sort of discussion with somebody that I don't know, which is kind of like the Dad Chronicle anyway. I'm pretty sure we can't, like, I can't rehash the fatherhood thing in any of this. Should I?
You could, but I wouldn't. And the reason I wouldn't is that's a really good series, but because you're in the top four, you get one shot. You get one knockout punch, right? And so you really need to wow with the episode. What you've got is probably a great series idea, and is no single episode may be the one that punches you in the face. But over time, people say, you know, I really like this podcast because they talk to so many dads and I get so many different perspectives, and cumulatively, I've built up a great appreciation. I might be wrong. You might find the dad that tells the compelling story that brings tears to everybody's eyes and explains to us all what fatherhood really means. But you might not. Whereas if you can do a POW chat, I mean, that is definitely going to bring something important out. And the Panzer thing, it's certainly not as substantive or important as these other two, but it's got a high degree of probability of being entertaining. So that's worth pursuing as well. The dad thing,
yeah.
it feels like a series idea, like a great series idea, but maybe not the best thing for the final four of a competition idea.
Fair enough. And, you know, you and I have been kind of chatting, I guess, every week now for the past several weeks. What do you think it is? And I'm sure you've listened to all of our shows and stuff, maybe not every single episode of this specific show. What is it that you think I can do to kind of stand out amongst the rest of the competition at this point in the game?
You've got a lot of natural advantages, like conversational stuff and your ability to present. Make sure you're conversational in anything you read, and make sure you're listening in the interview and adapting your questions as you go.
Awesome. Thank you very, very much.
Yeah, sure.
I'm here with Alex.
Hello, sir.
How's it going, man?
Doing great. Great to talk to you. Excited about this week's challenge.
I'm sure you are. And kind of the big thing that changed with this challenge is no more teams. You're all playing individually.
Yeah. It's funny that we're doing this, because this is normally like how I work. I normally am a solo podcaster, at least when it comes to doing the Dad Chronicle. I have a couple of partners who I do Joystick and Mouse with, but this is kind of getting me back into the groove of, okay, you know, got to figure out my own little way of doing things. And, you know, not to say that it was a negative experience working with the folks here, it's been awesome, but it's just getting back into the groove of, you know, I gotta figure all this out on my own. And it's kind of fun. It's liberating in a way that I don't want it to sound like I'm diminishing anything that they did for the sake of the competition. Does that make sense?
No, I totally know what you mean.
Okay.
But now it's, you know, basically you succeed or fail on your own merits, as opposed to if somebody else had an idea that didn't quite work out, or maybe you discounted an idea that's like, oh, that might have actually been better.
Yeah.
Now it's totally on you. The weight is on fully on your shoulders.
And I'm okay with it. I think at this point in the game, I've made it to fourth, like the top four. And I feel really proud with my contributions, and I'm looking forward to kind of putting everything that I've learned up to this point, because I think that everybody has brought something very unique to each experience that I've had so far on this show. And I'm looking forward to taking that and really pulling in everything that I've learned and utilizing it here now in the solo rounds.
Very good. Yeah, that's going to be a key thing that the judges are going to be looking for is who's grown the most over the time that they've been in the competition, and who's using some of the suggestions that they've been providing every week with the ideas. So I listened in, as you know, to the Tom session, and I had so I obviously know where you were at with things a couple days ago. Has any of that changed? Are you still on track with the things that you were planning?
Yeah, you know, I think it was a fantastic conversation with Tom. I came to the table kind of like I normally do with a few ideas, and he helped me really hone in on and realize what I feel actually really passionate about and what I'm going to lead with. And I think that's going to be the POW story.
Very good.
I got permission from the lady who I'm going to be speaking with to talk to her, and she's actually coming over. She's local, so she's going to be coming over, and we're going to be spending some time in the studio and talking about her story and her father's story, who's a POW. And I had a brief conversation with her about everything, and it's going to be really exciting.
It's going to be really, really powerful. I'm excited to hear that. Are you, with the knowledge of the time limit in mind, are you going to just record, and basically have a conversation with her, just record no matter how much time you end up recording, and then edit it down to the under 20-minute requirement? Or are you going to try and restrict things during the conversation?
Well, you know, I am going to let the conversation flow. And I think that the big key to interview podcasts, and I normally do interview podcasts, so I feel like I've got some good practice with this, is just keeping the conversation on track, not letting it go off too often in a different direction. Certainly letting it do that if it's natural and cohesive with the message that I'm trying to tell. But I think that it's going to be a little bit of, you know, we'll certainly record as long as we need to. and I'll edit it down. But I think the majority of the challenge is really going to be keeping the topic on track. Because when I had the conversation with her, I could tell that she wanted to share a lot, because there's a lot to say here. But yeah, the key is keeping it not necessarily reined in too much, but just enough so that it is a cohesive message at the end of it.
Interesting. It certainly feels like it's going to be way more than just some, you know, celebrity interview I certainly don't want to preposition it as anything, but it seems like it's going to be very powerful, a very powerful interview.
Yeah. And I'm really looking forward to, I feel like we're pulling in some similar feels of what we did last week with Children of War, but it's going to be different because we're having a one-on-one conversation with somebody rather than, you know, kind of recounting the journal entries, which was still powerful in its own right. This is going to be a little bit different, pulling from similar things that made that podcast successful, but in a much more conversational style. So I think that people are going to learn a little something. I think that people are going to feel a little something from the stories that she's going to tell based on what I heard yesterday when I had the conversation with her. And it's just going to be an interesting conversation. She's also just a good conversationalist. So that I feel takes away half the stress of an interview. If you can get along with somebody and have a good conversation with them.
Yeah. You want to make sure that they're not just, you know, single word answers. Yep.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
No, yeah, exactly. They have to be a conversationalist, which is, it provides for some good direction too. And then good follow-up questions, obviously, like you mentioned.
Exactly.
The overall podcast series that this is going to be a part of, obviously you've given some consideration to that. Is that something that is flexible enough that if the conversation does go in a different direction, I mean, you pretty much already know the subject that you guys are going to be talking about. It's not like you're going to go into a cooking demonstration or something.
Yeah. I think that this, so the way I'm thinking about framing it up is that this is a podcast series where we interview people who are or who have been prisoners of war, or who have been family members of prisoners of war. One of the backgrounds that I kind of come from is, you know, my wife's side of the family, her dad is a Marine, a retired Marine. We've been dating since we were in high school. So I've been kind of in that that world, kind of knowing what her dad has been through, the people who have sacrificed so much. I've heard so many different stories. Sure. And there's always some kind of support that is beneficial to people like that who have been through traumatic situations. And I think that part of that overcoming that trauma is telling the story and sharing it so that people don't feel alone. So I think that when I think about the broader series at play, it is something where people who are POWs or were POWs, or people who have experience, you know, or related to people with POWs, can tell a story and ultimately leave the podcast having just listened to something that's going to help them in the end. Because with this story, we're talking about a lady who, her father was a POW, but at the end of it, her and the people who she's recently linked up with are creating a museum dedicated to these people who were at this specific POW camp. And it's going to be located at the POW camp
where it stood. Oh, wow. Yeah. That's amazing. So the series would be anyone who is related to, tangentially or connected to someone who is in that sort of situation, or probably POWs themselves, if they're willing to talk about the experience. That's amazing. Wow. It's going to be, I'm going to prepare myself for that one with some tissues.
Yeah, I think that, and we have some really great artifacts and some other things to share that I'm kind of looking forward to her talking about on air. So we'll see how it all kind of unfolds, but I'm really excited to have the conversation. So we're having the conversation this weekend, really digging the whole 2 weeks to prep thing, because now I don't feel like I'm running around with a chicken, like a chicken with my head cut off this week.
Well, don't get used to it, but enjoy it this week.
Thanks for the vacation, Brian. This is great.
It's less of a vacation for Hammond and I, because we've got to get everybody else caught up to where we're at with the show so that, the backers, the Kickstarter backers and supporters can help vote for the finals. Speaking of the finals, kind of moving from that to a much lighter, typical reality show question. So let's say you make it to the final two. Who would you like to be up against in the finals?
Oh, I gotta say Amy. just because she and I, you know, we've been in this thing together since the start.
That's right. Yeah. No kidding.
I love Gidget and Jerry both today. I don't think that there's been a bad contestant. I've really enjoyed every interaction I've had with everybody on this show. But, you know, Amy and I feel like we've been kindred spirits throughout this whole thing.
Sure. And out of everybody, I mean, she's the one you've been teamed up with the longest, so it does make sense.
Yeah, it'd be fun to go head to head against the Philip.
That's right, the final battle, mano y mano.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, great. I'm so looking forward to hearing what you produce and how things go from here. So that's going to be the next piece of audio that people hear, and we'll take it right over to there. Thanks again, Alex. I appreciate you taking the time today.
Thank you, Brian.
My name is Wilbur Sharp. I was in North Africa in World War II and captured in North Africa, February the 14th, 1943. And I spent a little over 2 years in off like 64.
Welcome back to The Captive Warfighter, sharing the legacy of those who have been captured in the line of duty. I'm your host, Alex Albiso, and today you'll hear a conversation I had with Cindy Burgess, a lifelong volunteer and an advocate for prisoners of war. Cindy's the daughter of Wilbur Blaine Sharp Jr., who at the age of 20 was captured by German forces and incarcerated at Oflag 64 in Poland. And his experience as a prisoner of war was quite unique.
They had a glee club. They had a jazz band.
She also shares how she met Professor Mariusz Wanecki, a Polish academic, and how the two of them, along with other children of POWs, are keeping their parents' legacy alive by building a museum in their honor in Oflag 64.
I really do feel like this experience that our dads endured really helped to shape who they were and in turn helped to shape who we are.
And now my interview with Cindy. So Cindy, thank you very much for being here.
Happy to be here. Happy to share the story about my dad and his comrades.
So why don't we start from the beginning? Let's talk about your dad. Can you tell us about his time in World War II?
Yes, my dad was born and raised in Lebanon, Indiana, which is a small community. His older brother and his two sisters' husbands were in the Indiana National Guard. And dad always thought that was just kind of a neat thing. So when he was 16 years old, he asked his parents' permission that if he could join the Indiana National Guard also. Because he said, you know, my brother Gene will look after me, so don't worry about it. And what they did in the National Guard is they would go and for summer camp and on weekend duties and so on. And Gotcha. And he really enjoyed that quite a bit. During that time, they were given the opportunity to go to OCS. Dad at the time was a corporal. So,
and what is OCS?
Officer Candidate School.
Oh, okay.
So at the time, he was a corporal.
Okay.
So he did go to OCS, and he thought, okay, well, that's great. Now I'm an officer, and now I'm going to go home. And this was the end of November. And sure enough, December 7th, 1941, Pearl Harbor was attacked.
Yeah.
And, oh, by the way, everybody in the Indiana National Guard had to stay in until the end of the war. And so,
what was his reaction to that?
Well, you got to do what you got to do. You know, this was his responsibility, and that's what he did. From there, he shipped out to England, and he signed up with the artillery battalion at that time. And then things started to heat up in North Africa, and so his battalion then was shipped to Tunis. And they went into the Battle of Kasserine Pass and ended up being captured at Faid Pass on February the 14th in 1943. Dad and his comrades then were shuffled off to Capua in Italy. And there, in the meantime, back home, my grandparents, of course, had no idea what was going on. And when they went to Capua, a representative from the Vatican was there to greet them.
And you have an artifact.
I do have the original artifact in which Dad was able to address a document, a communique, to my grandparents. He was captured on February 14th. He wrote this document on February 21st, I believe it was, about 7 days later. And my grandparents did not know that he was safe and sound until June.
And is that the document there? Can you read it?
It's just a small document, and yeah. It's the sender. It's from the Secretary of State to His Holiness, and it says Sender Wilbur Blaine Sharp Jr., which would have been my dad, rank lieutenant, and then his number, what camp he was in, the military post, and it's addressed to, interesting, to his mother, not his father, Mrs. Wilbur B. Sharp Sr., and the message, 25 words or less, safe and sound in a transit camp in Italy, letters following love, Bill. That time, that was his name, Bill, from the parents.
And that's so fascinating because
it is fascinating.
He has less than 25 characters to get a message home to let them know, hey, I'm okay.
That's right.
Yet it leaves a lot of detail to question.
Of course it does.
So I know that your father ended up going from internment camp to internment camp and eventually ended up at Oflag 64 in Shubin, Poland. Is that correct?
It's where he ended up for 19 months. Yes, he was. There were about, let's see, the first 150, and Dad was one of the first 150 to go into this camp in Shubin, Poland. And, it was his group, the 117th Battalion, that artillery battalion that were incarcerated at Shubin. And then more POWs came in, and the final number was just short of 1,500.
What I'm also fascinated about is sort of the quality of life at these prisoner camps, specifically the one that your father was in, because typically when people think about what a prisoner of war camp is going to be like, they imagine the John McCain situation where he was, you know, his shoulders were broken, mm-hmm. torture, just really inhumane situations. But it was almost a little contrary to that, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And the reason being is that the Germans, keeping in mind that these were not the SS and the Gestapo, these were the Wehrmacht, so they were not as brutal as the SS and the Gestapo. In addition to the fact, Germany had to follow the Geneva Convention, and they had representatives from Sweden that would come and check the POW camps throughout Germany and Poland to make certain that they were following the Geneva Convention, you know. And so, and that was great. They had one fellow that they just adored. His name was Henry Soderberg, and he came down to check on the prisoners to see how things were being handled and so on. And in addition to the fact, he brought a lot of requests. The guys wanted books because they wanted to start classes. He brought musical instruments. He brought many supplies for them so that they could keep themselves occupied. And this is the beauty of this group. This was an unusual group. Many guys from many different backgrounds all across the country. You had musicians. You had correspondents. You had people in agriculture and so on. They pooled their skills together, and they developed their own community. But I want to backtrack just a little bit. One of the reasons that happened is the CO, Colonel Thomas Drake, apparently a very diminutive man, fought in World War I, and he had ideals on what a POW should be and how they should act. And he says, you are alive. Be grateful that you are alive. Do not be embarrassed that you were taken prisoner. This is what you're going to do. You are a United States soldier. You will act like a soldier. You will look like a soldier. You will, you know, treat each other like soldiers. So they, even though they didn't have many clothes, they had to keep them as pressed as they could. They had to shave every day. They had to make sure that they looked well kept. And my dad and many other of the former POWs really thank Colonel Drake for his disciplinary response.
Yeah, so it sounds like that consistency was really helpful. I mean, they're still in the Army, and acting as such is a key to that. So what were some of the other ways that they kept busy?
You know, what the fellows did to keep themselves occupied. Dad was very, very involved with the Little mm-hmm. Theater. And
let's talk about that. Can we dive into that?
Yeah, he loved acting, and this was a big morale booster for not only the POWs, but Dad said apparently that the German guards would come in and enjoy the shows too. They had a glee club, they had a jazz band, and all this stuff was all these items were provided by the YMCA out of Sweden with this Henry Soderberg. And then they had this document that came out. It was a newspaper. It's called The Item. And it came out on a monthly basis. And the editors were correspondents. Frank Diggs used to work for the Washington Post, and he was one of the leaders of this periodical. And one fellow, I just finished reading a book about him. His name was Tony Lumpkin. He saved all the items, so he had 15 of them, and he used those as insulation against the cold when he marched out. And so he has every single one of the original items.
Wow.
His family does. He's deceased now.
So the Germans were okay with this?
Yes, because the POWs were busy. Therefore, they weren't getting in trouble. They were constantly busy. And again, they had lots of classes. They were teaching language classes. And then we also had people that were in agriculture, and they planted seeds. They'd write home and ask their families to send them seeds so that they would have fresh vegetables in the summertime. And because the ground was so hard, they really didn't want to have to hoe it up and so on. So they made waves to the Germans that there may be tunnels under their under the ground there. So the Germans came in and hoed up the entire plot for the vegetables and so on. So it was all done for them by the German guards. And, they were ingenious, these guys. I mean, they had so much fun just trying to fool the Germans. It was really quite hysterical.
That is fascinating.
And that's what the item did, too, is because they added a lot of humor.
Okay.
And in order to survive, humor was important.
Yeah, but I mean, with all this fun that they were having, I mean, they still had jobs, right? Like, they were still taking the war seriously.
Everybody had a job.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to finish that job, and they had to do that job completely.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had the intelligence folks that were doing things. You had the people that were doing the tunnel digging, because they did dig tunnels.
Did they ever get caught doing that?
No.
Wow.
And the reason that happened is we still think we're going to that there are tunnels under the site, and we're going to get some ground penetrating devices there.
Wow.
Once we develop some funds and so on to find out exactly what was going on, because this had been a POW camp many years prior with Poles and French and British in this same location. This is it's about a 50 acre in size. And many of the buildings are still there. It currently is a boys' reform school.
And they didn't end up escaping.
They tried.
Yeah.
Several of them tried, and they were put in the cooler a number of times and so on. But when the Great Escape occurred in Poznan, in Zagan, excuse me, Hitler said, no more escaping, and the notice went out. This is not a sport.
So it was January of 1945, and the Germans have recognized that the Russians were starting to march westward. So they decided to abandon Oflag 64 and march the prisoners towards Germany. So while on the road to Germany, your dad probably saw this as an opportune time to escape. Can you explain exactly how he did that?
Dad and two of his buddies stayed in a haymow. And the Germans shot in the ceiling of the haymow, missed all three of them. But they went on because they knew that the Russians were on their way. The Germans were frightened. Dad and his buddies then continued to march. Now they changed their route east to go toward the Russians because the Russians were getting close. And they wanted, because the Russians were their allies, they wanted to join up with the Russians. So they thought the Russians had sent them home right, post-haste, right to the United States. Oops, not so fast. So the Russians then stole everything that they had, their journals, their watches, anything that they had, and gave them firearms and put them in the front lines. And that lasted about 5 days with Dad and his buddies. And they said, they're our allies, and that Lend-Lease Jeep really belongs to the United States. So we think it's time for us just to take off. And he says it wasn't probably a very smart thing to do, but we were anxious to get out of there. And they did. And then they found some Poles. The Poles were fabulous to the prisoners as they were walking out. You'll hear so many wonderful stories from the guys that were housed by the Poles, that they fed them a lot of food, let them come in. Some of them even let them sleep in their houses instead of the barns. Anyway, Dad and his buddies took boxcars to Odessa, Russia, and there they caught freighters. They were on several different freighters and got back to Boston in July of 1945. Coincidentally, on my grandmother's birthday.
Wow, what
and
a birthday
Dad,
present.
Yeah, I know. Dad called, happy birthday, Mom. And so it was quite something.
So after that ordeal, did he end up going back to the army? What was...
Well, what they did is they sent him to retraining and trying to beef him up. And by then the war had ended. And so Dad came home and went to work and carried on with his life.
Can you share who Professor Mariusz is?
Oh, yes. Okay, Mariusz Wanecki was born in 1976, and he was a child, obviously, in Shubin, and he would pass this site on his way to school. And so, because he's an academic, he kept digging and digging and finally realized that this was a former POW camp and he wanted more information. In 2012, my dad received a letter from Mariusz with 65 questions about Dad's time as a POW. And what Mariusz had done is he had gone to our archives to learn how many POWs were still alive. And each one of them got a different set of questions based on what they did in the camp. So we worked through that with my dad, and the questions did, it helped to spark memories. And this is how all of this came about, because it brought the Kriege kids. Kriege is a shortened word for German POW. I will not try and pronounce it because I will not do it justice, but Kriege means POW. In German.
So how did the idea of a museum come about for this group of men?
Because we have so much, accumulated so much information, and there is a remaining barrack on the site, we really think it would be a bonus, not only as a memory for the Americans, but as a memory for the beautiful work and the heartfelt help that the Poles lent to our dads when they were incarcerated and when they walked out.
What is it like for you guys, the Kriege kids, going on site to that place all these years later?
It's really emotional. The first time I went, I had not met Mariusz yet, and he says, I will meet you at the train station, which is where your dad came in. And it was all I could do to contain myself when I saw this kid standing at this ramshackle railway station, and I looked at him and I said, do you mind if I give you a hug? And of course, we've been wonderful friends ever since then. And then 2 years ago, when I had the opportunity to walk the same steps that Dad walked when he would walk up to his room in the barrack, kind of took my breath away.
That's pretty emotional.
Yep, it really is. It took my breath away. So
what do you think it means to the Kriege kids to put together a museum like this, especially with the idea that a lot of their parents have passed at this time?
It means a great deal to the kids, because as we have come together as a group, we have learned so much more, not only about our dads, but about the involvement at the camp. And I really do feel like this experience that our dads endured really helped to shape who they were, and in turn helped to shape who we are.
Yeah. What are some ways that you think you have maybe appreciated some of the life lessons that your dad has taught you, based maybe on some of his experiences?
Well, absolutely. With his experiences, I don't quit. I keep going on, and very, very optimistic about most of the end results. Dad is constantly looking at the bright side of no matter what is in front of him. And that I really have embraced, and it has enhanced my life. And, you know, maybe I would have been that way in the first place. I'm not so sure. I think he modeled it for me, and I appreciate that.
I love the enthusiasm. I love the optimism.
Yeah.
So where can people go to learn more about OFLAG 64 and learn more about this project and about all the men who are involved?
Okay. OFLAG64.us.
Best of luck.
Thank you very much.
This is a very emotional story for you. This is a very emotionally driven endeavor that you guys are undertaking. I wish you guys all the best with this, and I can't wait to hear more about it in the future.
Thanks, Alex.
Special thanks to my guest, Cindy Burgess, for sharing her father's story. And this music you hear behind me is very special. It is her father's glee club, recorded while they were in OFLAG 64. Enjoy.
That was The Captive Warfighter, Alex's entry for Interview Week. On the next episode, we'll catch up with Jerry on his interview process, and later this week, judging and elimination, where the competition will end for one of our contestants. All this and more coming up on America's Next Top Podcaster.